It's Tuesday, the 5th of August. I'm Alec Hogg. Here's your Biz News Briefing. In the news in this episode, Pretoria Girls High, Newcastle's steel plant, Darwin in Australia, Nedbank, Palantir, Tesla, and, well, the strange company called Astronomer. Astronomer and Gwyneth Paltrow in our tailpiece. You've got to wait around for that one. But let's kick off with a big story of the moment. We do know that education is highly politicized in South Africa, but nowhere has this political issue become as close to home as what's going on right now at Pretoria High School for Girls, where the headmistress has been suspended by the ANC Education Department in Gauteng. The ANC, remember, which only has 30% of the votes in Gauteng. She's been suspended because her husband has voluntarily assisted in sorting out the gardens at the school. I spoke today to the husband and to the chairman of the school governing body. Let's have a listen in. For a bit of the highlights, you can get the full interview on Biz News TV.
The third charge that involves me, it was twofold. Firstly, that she had allowed me to drive one of the school buckies, which belongs to the governing body and not the department, as a matter of interest, for private use. And also that she had allowed me to supervise employees of the school. She was found guilty for both charges, but she was found guilty for something slightly different to what she was charged for, which is a little odd. Shows massive holes in the thinking. Because obviously I didn't drive the bucky for private use. That was proved quite adequately. I took the bucky to go and get school supplies and plants and stuff for the gardens. Simply because if I do it, then somebody who has another job to do doesn't have to do it. I've got time. I'm retired. He also found her guilty for me allowing me to manage the gardeners, which he says are government or departmental employees. Firstly, they're not departmental employees. They work for the governing body, appointed as such. And secondly, I don't manage them. So, you know, the whole thing's full of holes.
I mean, if we just rewind this thing 12 months, there was that alleged racism with the 12 girls. You know, the department keeps on claiming that they supported the process. We supported the outcome, which is absolute nonsense, because the process and the suggestion from the SGB was not to charge the girls initially, was to do more findings. And we were instructed, and in fact, Mrs. Erasmus was threatened with her job, that if she did not act and charge those girls today, she can take the stuff and leave the building. So there was no support from the department. It was an instruction. We acted on that instruction. On that following Monday, I went back to the department and said, guys, I spent the whole weekend seeking legal advice to help you, Mr. Department, not to help us, that this process has not been followed correctly. And the words that they said to me in front of 20 other people was, Craig, we don't care about process and procedure. You will act today. So right from the onset, this was very deliberate and intentional. This was not, we support the school, we support the outcome. Because had they supported the school and the outcome, we wouldn't be in the situation that they're in. They should have come back to the SGB and said, you've handled this correctly, thank you, and we support you. But what they've done is, in the background, have said, we don't agree with you. We're going to put an investigative lawyer to come and investigate a culture of racism in your school. And we will find it. They actually stated it. We will find it, whether it's tangible or not. We will find something against your school. And that is in the media. So this has been absolutely deliberate and intentional from day one. And we just can't get our head around it. Why us? But I also just want to make it very clear that I'll take my hat off to Mark Erasmus and to Philip Erasmus, because they are not trying to, when I say that, Mrs. Erasmus is not trying to be difficult in this process. You know, she could quite easily have taken the sanction, put a tail between her legs, and sacrificed 3 months' salary and moved on. For her, it's not about that. It's the principle of she signed on to certain values and principles as being a headmistress or principal of a school, and she's acting on those. She knows she's not guilty on those two charges that they found her guilty on, and she keeps on in the background, and a lot of people don't know this. She's not doing this for Philip Erasmus. She's potentially not doing this for Pretoria High School for Girls. She's doing this for the state of education in this country. And she has continually vowed to stick to that. The amount of people that have reached out to her on a national level from other schools in other provinces for support, guidance, mentorship is unbelievable. I'm in her office twice, three times a week, and I'm there when those calls are made. The amount of support that she has, and she keeps on saying to me, Craig, I'm doing this for the better of education in this country, and I'm not trying to be difficult. And that's very important to note, because she's just, you know, she's not being difficult. She's fighting for what's right and fighting for the better of education. And I think that's so critical. This is no personal benefit for her to be so disruptive. This is actually devastating for them as a family, but she's prepared to make that sacrifice.
Mike, I guess what you were saying in the a little earlier, there are 1,500 young minds who are watching this, and young people are not stupid, especially today. They're seeing exactly what's going down here, and presumably from what Craig said a moment ago, this is also motivating your wife's approach.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's about example set. It's about what to do or what not to do. What a good example and a bad example. I mean, she's had so much support from the students at the school, from the learners at the school. It's unbelievable. They stop her in the corridors and express their solidarity. They walk up to her and give her a hug. I mean, that's just, it's almost not a done thing these days, but they just do it. She gets notes, she gets messages. The support is immense.
You just got to ask yourself, who are these people that we give so much power to? These education bureaucrats who decide that it's in their power to witch hunt a very good headmistress, and the results are shown. But you can either look at this and get very grumpy about it, or you can say, hang on, something big's happening here. Something very interesting's happening here. And maybe it's a Rob Herzog moment. And I refer there to what Rob Herzog did 4 years ago at the BizNews conference, where he called out the ANC, he called out the government. And at that time, he was the only one who seemed prepared to actually take a stand. Today, everybody's doing it. Who knows? Education might just be at a watershed moment. Well, a watershed moment indeed is happening right now in my boyhood town of Newcastle. So I've been paying quite a lot of attention to this, not least because the steel plant, the ArcelorMittal steel plant in Newcastle, is really, to many, in many ways, the whole reason for the existence of that town right now. As you'll hear from a clip on the interview that I did yesterday with the chief executive of ArcelorMittal, Cobus Verster, the whole town's future is at stake, but not just that. 80,000 jobs are one thing, but there's a whole lot more that's going on here. I apologize beforehand for my strange hairstyle, but this is a result of doing the interview very remotely from the city of Pietermaritzburg, which, oh my goodness, how sad to see the decline in that wonderful, wonderful center. And who knows, again, maybe we the people will say enough and no more. Let's start fixing things. Anyway, let's move on to Cobus Verster.
You know, the IDC has given us cash to fund the losses of longs up to the end of September. So that undertaking still stands and that timeline still stands. I think what we did with our announcement is just to sensitize people. You know, if the drop dead date is 30 September, you need to start doing things early in August to start pushing down the supply chain and all of those. And while we still talking to government, I mean, nothing happened on the PPS system. Nothing happened on Eskom yet. So we've lodged an appeal of that. Transnet's performance was probably down 50% of what it used to be. So, and the tariff introduction is very slow. And where we have tariffs, the contravention of those things is just not policed well. So, we have a line in the sand. That's our date. They've got time to do what they have to do. If not, we've developed an alternative. How do we get the balance sheet fixed? And we will dispose of all the assets that's not contributing to the flat core part of the business.
So in essence, what we have here is a part of your business that the IDC, the Industrial Development Corporation, which is owned by government, is funding while it does its due diligence to see whether it has got a different plan to the one that you've been implementing. But as a private sector business, you can't keep losing R1 billion every 6 months. Is that, when you join the dots, is that exactly the point that we're at?
100%, Alec. And I think many of these, the causes or the root causes of the problem in the lungs, I say is government's problem. So it's fine that they need to take a view. And if not commercially, we cannot support it any longer. We've been losing billions in trying to fix that. And most probably we've done it too long.
Let's look at the worst case scenario to start with. The Newcastle plant gets closed down. How many people would be affected by that?
Directly about 3,500 people.
Indirectly?
No, indirectly is difficult. I mean, there's been studies done that people talk about 80,000 people. No, I can tell you about how many downstream companies will close down because they use our steel to produce components. You'll have a mine or two or three shut down. You have some quarries shutting down on the upstream side. So the impact is massive. You know, people don't think about the two kindergartens that will close, B&B and all of those things. So those are the type of things, but that is well understood by government. The social impact and the social cost, they've done their numbers. It's much more than the trying to support and resolve the Newcastle problem. Are they well aware of that? And I think they're slow, but they're trying.
So the ball is very much in the government's court right now on whether to lose or save 80,000 jobs.
Like a soapy breakup scene, selling your car can be an emotional experience.
Just how dramatic was the car selling experience?
Not dramatic at all. I did my research and We Buy Cars was by far the best price.
Very not dramatic. But I like drama.
I was standing there watching my phone, waiting for the money to get in, and there it was.
Yes. Car, driving.
We Buy Cars. The easiest way to sell your car, by far.
I wouldn't mind a little more drama. Anybody bring me some tears?
That's life.
I don't know if there are any awards for great advertising, but my goodness, We Buy Cars has got to be up there if there are. No awards to the Aussie government. 10 years ago, they decided that it made sense to sell the port of Darwin to the Chinese on a 99-year lease. Now they're not so sure anymore and they want the port back. Here's the interesting story, which has implications for South Africa, given the rather strange decisions that we make, or these short-term decisions that we make that have very serious long-term implications. This comes from our partners at the Financial Times in this morning's FT News Briefing.
10 years ago, the main port in Australia's remote northern territory was sold to a Chinese company called Landbridge. It was for a 99-year lease. Now, Australia regrets that decision, and it wants to reclaim Darwin's port. Easier said than done, though. My colleague Nick Files is here to tell us more. So, Nick, how did this 99-year lease originally come about?
So we have to go back in time a little bit to 2015. The Northern Territory is a very remote part of Australia, and the port there was in a pretty bad state, and the Northern Territory government didn't have a lot of money to revamp it. They sought a buyer for it, and at that stage, Chinese companies were investing a lot into Australia. It wasn't particularly controversial, so the people running the Northern Territory at the time felt like this was an elegant solution to bring investment into a piece of critical infrastructure for the state that at that stage was not seen as particularly controversial.
Why is the Australian government so worried about this deal all of a sudden?
Well, very quickly after the sale happened, the US then President Obama made it clear that they weren't particularly comfortable with this The thing about Darwin is that it is not only an Australian military base, it is a US military base as well, and quite an important one for the Pacific. So it was made pretty clear pretty quickly that actually Australia's main security ally wasn't particularly pleased. And that pressure has built and built over the last decade with the sort of tenser situation now geopolitically in the Indo-Pacific, and the Australian government has now decided to address it.
Are there specific concerns about Landbridge, the Chinese company that bought the port?
So Landbridge themselves, who operate and have invested in the port of Darwin, the parent company is chaired by Yi Cheng, who's a Chinese billionaire with pretty clear connections to the Chinese government. And a lot has been made of that. And it's not just the Darwin port where that's become an issue. We've had action taken by the Australian government over some rare earths mining companies, pretty small businesses, but there have been concerns about companies linked to the Chinese industry sort of taking control of what are now emerging as strategic industries for Australia.
How does the Australian government plan to get Landbridge to sell, Nick?
It's been a funny process because they haven't really said how. Forced nationalisation is possible, but Albanese has tried to steer away from that. That would be quite messy and ugly and possibly cause issues with the Chinese government. So they're trying to basically engineer a sale. We've had some rumors emerge that there is some interest from a US private equity fund called Cerberus, which has links to the White House. They may be bidding potentially with Australian logistics businesses, but it is really going to come down to hard bargaining now, because you have an unwilling seller. They're probably going to want a pretty good price, and perhaps some of those buyers don't want to pay that.
Nick Fildes is the FT's Australia and Pacific correspondent. Thanks, Nick.
No worries.
No worries, Nick. But it just shows how far removed many are from what's really happening on the ground. Here you've got a Chinese company with a billionaire who's very close to Beijing and wanting to be bought out by the Australians by a US company that's very close to Washington. Oh, my word, there are many layers to this onion that we call a world. A company that is doing things as best it can here in South Africa and giving shareholders a pretty juicy dividend yield is Nedbank. Financial results out from the company today. Jason Quinn, the chief executive, spoke to our partners at Bloomberg and expressed some disappointment at what has happened to the South African economy. They were expecting the economy to grow a lot faster, and as a consequence, under the circumstances, Nedbank thinks that a 6% growth in its profits is actually pretty good stuff.
In March, we were quite buoyant on growth. You know, we had GDP kind of mid-ones, 1.5 or thereabouts forecast for the year. And then we saw that first quarter print come in only at 0.1% up. So we've moderated our growth forecast down to 1% for the year for GDP in South Africa. And we've factored in as much as we can quantify with respect to risks of tariffs and these types of things. So if anything, there might be still a little bit of risk to the downside compared to where we're forecasting that 1%. So certainly not quite the environment we were hoping for. There were some positives, though. You know, rates came off. You know, the sort of central bank MPC cut rates, so cumulatively by 125 basis points. Prime's at 10.5 now, which we think is a conducive rate to lending. And there's some other positives around you know, energy stability and the like. But certainly we didn't see the growth in our market that we would have hoped when we were together in March.
What do you think then the implications are then for the bank and for the economy, just given the risks to the downside, as you were just saying?
Well, I still think, you know, there's an incredible opportunity for public-private partnerships. I think that the focus on infrastructure from business, from us as a bank, from the government, remains intense. There's lots of work going on in the background. Jennifer, we still have a good pipeline of deals, right? So it's not like there's not a lot going on. It's just the sort of timelines of deal closing is a bit slower than we would like. And some of that's probably sentiment driven. You know, when sentiment is uncertain, when sort of budgets are delayed, you know, I think business people get a little bit more cautious. The man in the street also gets a little bit more cautious. So we've got, you know, still cautious optimism with respect to the potential of the economy. particularly around infrastructure. I mean, let's not forget that the resource sector has had an incredibly strong period. So there are some positives out there. So there's some green shoots in our lending books. You know, if you look at Nedbank, you know, we focused tremendously on auto finance, so vehicle finance, as well as mortgages. And I'm pleased to say we took a bit of share in both of those asset classes. And Jennifer, we also saw our deposit franchise grow 10%. So I think, you know, if you're, you know, executing your strategies well, as I think we are, you know, there's still some progress to be made.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Those who don't quite get it, the Sun Exchange advert refers to businesses who've got space on their roofs that they can put solar onto, and we do know that that's growing pretty rapidly. So anyway, support our sponsors. They support us. Something else that supports us is our portfolios, our investment portfolios. Now, the one, the global portfolio, was launched, well, going on for 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. But more recently, we launched the Shift portfolio. And in both of those, we've had the very good fortune of investing in a company called Palantir. Those portfolios, incidentally, are part of the package for BizNews Premium members. It's just part of a very substantial package, which includes fabulous insights from our top columnist, R.W. Johnson, and more. But I'm not here to sell you BizNews Premium. You go and test it and give it a go yourself. But what I am going to tell you about, though, is that this investment that we made in our portfolio in Palantir has been an absolute boomer. It's in the investment world, if you get what is called a 10-bagger once or twice in your lifetime, you are delighted. That means if you get a stock that you buy at 100 and it goes to 1,000, in other words, 10 times, well, Palantir, in only 4 years, in fact, 3.5 years, is already a 16-bagger. Financial results were out late last night. Here's the way that Bloomberg reported it immediately after the markets closed. And, well, it seems like this company just keeps on going stronger and stronger.
Palantir just crossing the wire right now. I'm going to start with the forecast. The company saying that for the full year, it sees revenue in a range of $4.14 to $4.15 billion. That's an increase over the previous guidance that it had given of about $3.9 billion on average. On adjusted operating profit, $1.91 billion to $1.92 billion. Again, raising the profit forecast up from about $1.72 billion. I'm going to go back to the quarter that just passed. That was the second quarter. The company did beat on both the top and the bottom line in that realm as well. $1 billion in revenue. Street was looking for $939 million. And on the EPS side, the company, Scarlett, posting 16 cents a share adjusted EPS. The Street, on average, was looking for 14.
All right, let's take a look at the earnings release. The company talking about how this was a phenomenal quarter. They're seeing the astonishing impact of AI leverage. And in terms of the commercial business, revenue growth of 93% year over year. Revenue growth of 48% year over year as well. And they're looking at third quarter revenue they're guiding it to 50% growth year over year as well. I mean, these are massive numbers when you look at it. Is it massive enough to justify the gains that we've seen so far? And the initial answer, at least, seems to be yes, given that the stock is up about 1.5% after hours trade.
You know, it's interesting. We talked with our Mandeep Singh, Matt and I did earlier, and said he was focusing on that commercial segment. He said anything below 70% would be a miss. So they easily beat and when it comes to that. But he also just talked about, you know, this one in terms of price to sales and what we are seeing in terms of the ratio, some real overvaluation. But at least initially, it seems like investors are okay with it. And the stock is up about 2.8% here in the aftermarket.
Yeah. For the first time, U.S. commercial revenue grew faster than government revenue at 93% year over year compared to 53%. So massive
big number.
Massive release there from Palantir.
Massive release from Palantir. I'm kind of underestimating. We bought it into the portfolio at $8.50. As you saw there, it's now trading at $165. Wow. It was up 4.5% yesterday. After hours trading, another 4%. So it's just like a runaway train. But it's like many things in the artificial intelligence industry. You just got to find the right one. If you get the right one, well, you can change your address in a positive way. Someone who had to change their address in not such a positive way was the former chief executive of a company called Astronomer. You may, or if you've been anywhere near social media, you would have seen the clip that we're going to show you in just a moment. But you might not have seen the one that follows it with actress Gwyneth Paltrow helping the company to turn a disastrous affair in the C-suite into something positive.
Yeah. Oh, look at these two. All right, come on. You're okay? Oh, what? Either they're having an affair or they're just very shy.
Thank you for your interest in Astronomer. Hi, I'm Gwyneth Paltrow. I've been hired on a very temporary basis to speak on behalf of the 300-plus employees at Astronomer. Astronomer has gotten a lot of questions over the last few days, and they wanted me to answer the most common ones. Yes, Astronomer is the best place to run Apache Airflow, unifying the experience of running data, ML, and AI pipelines at scale. We've been thrilled so many people have a newfound interest in data workflow automation. As for the other questions we've received, yes, there is still room available at our Beyond Analytics event in September. We will now be returning to what we do best, delivering game-changing results for our customers. Thank you for your interest in Astronomer.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there you had the CEO caught at a Coldplay conference with his arms in, well, a strategic position around his head of HR. Both, by the way, if you don't know the story, both were married to other people. Both have subsequently left Astronomer, but Astronomer's turning it to advantage by using Gwyneth, well, as you saw, in quite a fun ad. Anyway, that's our tailpiece for today. That's the briefing for today. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, cheerio.